Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone, alongside CEO of The Wine Growers, Carissa Cruz, here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
Good day.
Good day. Good day.
Good
what
day.
What a funny thing to say.
I know.
Do people, I mean, nobody says that anymore.
It's funny.
Good day. It's sort of a negative thing.
I often talk to my chair of our board, Brett Munsell, and he'll call my cell phone, and clearly I know it's him, so I'm like, hi. And he's like, well, that's an interesting. So then he called back later that day. I was like, greetings. And he was like, started laughing. He's like, what's that for? I'm like, I don't know. I'm trying something different because you gave me a hard time about hi. So
yeah, we always know who it is pretty much.
Yeah, right? There's no surprise anymore because, yeah, it used to be like, you know, this is
like,
Carissa.
Who is this?
Or greetings. And yeah, now you just kind of.
Cruz household.
Yeah. But then it feels weird to be like, hi, Brett. Because that feels like a little freaky too. I don't know. Is there proper etiquette these days with all the cell phone?
Just text.
Navigation?
Just text.
Don't call. Why would you actually interact with humans? Just text and email.
Well, you are interacting with humans, hopefully, if you're texting. But yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of different.
I get it.
Anyway, we're like into our summer fun around Sonoma County.
What do you mean by that?
A good day.
That can mean a lot of different things. Do you mean farmers markets?
I do. So many things. Parties in the square, evenings out, the weather is nice and gets nice and warm, and our community gathers, which I think is very cool and a very fun and not something I'd experienced really before I moved to Sonoma County, that kind of different days of the week, the different towns, cities, villages around Sonoma County, I think I caught most of what we call them, townships, have kind of a day that they pick doing a farmer's market evening or live music. And so maybe I'll just run through a couple for folks to know. So in Santa Rosa, it's the Wednesday night market, and that runs from May 13th through August 12th in the Courthouse Square. Really fun. Typically has music, food vendors, local farmers, artisans, all the fun stuff.
Family friendly.
Yes. Or you can go to Windsor Summer Nights on the Green, typically on Thursdays. And that the concerts are from 6 to 8 with the farmer's market from right before and through from 5 to 8 with food vendors, produce, etc. One of my favorites from when I lived over in the town of Sonoma.
Yeah.
Which, do you go to this one?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
So,
it's great.
Yeah,
on the
tell
Sonoma
me about
Square.
That one.
Yeah, Tuesday night market on the square. So they sort of just take over that whole central part of Sonoma.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, so there's not only just like the produce and all that kind of thing, but there's a lot of things for dinner. There's places to go for a drink. There's places to get some wine. So
and if you're
love
on
it. Music too.
Other end of the county in Healdsburg, also on Tuesday nights, they do their Tuesday nights on the plaza, weekly summer concerts. From 6 to 8. And then if you'd like to go to one of our furthest north parts of our community, Cloverdale's Friday Night Live. So downtown Cloverdale Plaza comes alive with music, food, and community beginning at 6 p.m. on Fridays. So so many fun things.
Yeah.
Right? So literally you could almost, I don't think I saw a Monday on there, but you could almost go to a different plaza festival experience market every night of the week.
I think you could. And those are just the ones that are
like
summertime. I
mean,
there's the annual ones too, which keep going. So I think you still have Healdsburg probably on Saturdays and lots of other things.
Yep. So much fun.
We'll be right back on The Good Stuff. On today's Good Stuff in studio, we have two guests, Paul Hawley, General Manager, and John Hawley, Founder of Hawley Wines. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Father, son.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes. You passed the first test.
I know.
All right.
I know.
We're off to a good start.
Yeah, I pronounce your name correctly, and yes, so far so good. But, so we should maybe start
at the beginning.
Start with John. I mean, Hawley's been around for a little while. You've been involved in winemaking for a long time. Tell us kind of how you got started.
Well, I took I think it was a torturous path. I wasn't quite sure where it was leading at the time. I started out as I was working as a motorcycle mechanic, and then I became a machinist, and then I worked on a landscaping crew, and then I got into carpentry and building decks, and then I was building houses, and then I was doing cabinetry and plumbing and electrical work on the houses, and then I went back to school to study winemaking, and I discovered that I had all the skills that you need to be a winemaker, because you're dealing with a lot of engines and motors that break down, and you need to know how to
fix things. Yes.
You need to understand how to use electricity, because there's nobody available on Sunday afternoon when things go down. And it just turned out that I was on the path to be a winemaker all along. I just didn't know it.
Well, where were all these other things happening? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Mill Valley.
Okay, so not far away.
Yes. And my father was a newspaper advertising representative, so he did a lot of entertaining, and he liked wine, and he had a wine cellar under the house, and so me and my friends would sometimes...
We know where this is going.
Down into the cellar.
And my friends would say, well, there's five of them in this bin that are all the same. He won't miss one of them.
Oh, wow. I had the same introduction to wine.
I was just going
to
ask.
I'm not sure if you know that. But.
I should hope so. I mean, it's only
fair. For me, it was taking bottles down to Dry Creek with my friends around the campfire.
Nice.
Okay, see, so when you grow up in South Dakota like me, you don't really have those like good bottles of wine to like pull out of the family cellar. So kind of fortunate.
The problem is when it's a good bottle, and then you find out later that you drank your dad's $200 bottle of wine.
with toasted marshmallows or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It's all still an education, which has led you probably both here. So you start drinking wine at a young age. Your dad's got a cellar.
Mm-hmm.
You go on this path to do all these different things. How does wine making even come on the horizon?
Well, somewhere along the line, I needed work, and I went to work doing viticulture work for Buena Vista Winery, which was quite beautiful.
Yeah.
Didn't pay well, but it was really nice being out there in the sunshine and hoeing around the vines and doing all this physical labor. And it really kind of caught my attention. And I thought, wow, it'd be neat to go into the wine business. And then a friend of mine became a vineyard manager, and he started bringing up these bottles of wine from Chalon Vineyard, where he worked in Monterey, and doing blind tastings with us of, six Chardonnays or whatever. And it really got my interest, and I kind of thought, wow, this sounds really fascinating. Mm-hmm. You're creating these flavors. It's working with nature.
Yeah.
There's some being outside. It just brought together a lot of things that I really like.
Yeah, I love that.
And so you studied wine.
So I went to UC Davis and studied winemaking. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Backtrack a little bit? Mm-hmm. So because you were talking about construction and landscaping and plumbing and electrical. I mean, those are all very unique trades unto themselves. How did you learn? I mean, were you just kind of always naturally inclined to that? Did you go back into school for those things? Like,
no, I just did
self-taught.
It. I just did it. Worked with, other people would say, oh, here, you're going to do the, we're going to have you plumb this house. Here's some copper pipe and here's some fittings and this is how you do it. And so
you were an apprentice all over town, learning all these different things.
Kind of like.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Though it wasn't really through the an apprenticeship program, but I learned them all by doing them. And then I got into the wine business and realized that in a small winery, you have to be able to do all those things.
Yeah.
You can't hire
Absolutely.
Specialists to come in to take care of all your little problems.
Yeah. No, it's true in the winery. It's true in the vineyard.
Yeah.
It's, you got to be able to pull out a tractor and fix it on occasion. So.
Yeah. And then along the line, I got married. And as I was about to transfer up to UC Davis for my last 2 years, I purchased a piece of land in Dry Creek Valley from my wife's uncle.
Uh-huh.
We just happened to be having a picnic on this beautiful property. And my wife's uncle said, well, I've decided to sell it because there was a big fire up there and it isn't as beautiful as it used to be. That was back in 1972, there was a fire.
Wow.
And my dad said, why don't you buy it? And I said, well, I don't have any money. And he said, just write him a note Wow. Well, what's a note? Well, you just write down, I promise to pay this price. Anyway, I wrote him a note. I paid him the going interest rate, which I think was 12% interest a year back then, and with a promised balloon payment in 5 years, which gave me time to get out of college, and get all my friends together, and then I built my house on weekends while I was working at Clos du Bois Winery. In 1981.
So what do you do in your free time?
Exactly.
Build houses.
The unique thing about that year of 1981 was that I didn't do anything. I didn't go to anybody's party. I didn't do anything but do my house. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the general manager, Clos du Bois, was very nice. And oftentimes on Friday afternoon, he'd say, you don't have that much to do. Why don't you just go home and work on your house a little bit? So I would cut all the pieces of wood on the weekend days I would call up friends and they would come up and I'd provide lunch and beer and they'd bring their hammers and they would hammer together the boards I'd cut. They don't want to make any mistakes, so they said, you do all the cutting. We're just blind hammerers. And
so your friends essentially built themselves a guest bedroom to come visit you as often as they want. It sounds like kind of paying it forward.
The house got bigger.
They should have gotten one. But anyway, it was a unique experience, and I'm terribly grateful for my friends.
So did you go from, you finished your studies at Davis, was Clos du Bois the first job?
It was. Preston Vineyards. Okay. I went to Preston Vineyards the week after I graduated in 1980.
Okay.
And made wine there, which was really neat because Lou Preston had just stepped out of it and was doing just more sales and marketing. And so he was very organized and would leave me a list of exactly what he wanted, rack this tank, do this with the lees, add yeast to this tank or whatever. And so I got to do everything, crushing the, dumping the bins of grapes into the hopper and, making sulfur adds and whatever, sterile filtering it and bottling, all the steps. And then I had been working there for about 6-7 months, and then I got a call from a friend who was the general manager at Clos du Bois, and he hired me to be their initial winemaker. Mm-hmm. They had been having their wine made for them at other wineries, mm-hmm. and they wanted to start making their own.
Now that was a big change in scale, wasn't it? I mean, I know Clos du Bois by the end was a very big winery, but
it was only about 20,000 cases at the time, so it wasn't much large, maybe twice the size of what Preston's operation was.
Okay,
but
pretty big for Sonoma County, though, even in today's standards. Kind of big wineries, small wineries.
It got big. When I left, I think there were 400,000 cases.
Wow. Oh my God.
The thing that was really helpful for me was I was very interested in the traditional winemaking techniques that the French had been using to make these wonderful wines that sometimes I got a chance to taste. And so I wanted to really incorporate that into the wonderful grape product that we have, which is really. I just think that we have the best climate for growing grapes in the world here in California.
Here. Mm-hmm.
And so the general manager was kind of a Francophile. He'd been to France several times and was very interested in their techniques and very interested in doing barrel fermentation, which nobody wanted to do. And so we jumped in and barrel fermented the first wines, and when the board of directors tasted those against the wines that had been made in stainless steel, they unanimously said, well, why don't we just barrel ferment all of our Chardonnay then?
Wow. Huh.
And so we were the first major California winery to go into barrel fermentation and malolactic fermentation, which is a bacterial fermentation, traditional methods that the French have used for hundreds of years. And our wine started winning a lot of medals. We became medal-winningest winery after I'd been there for a couple years. And that continued until I went to Clos du Bois, to Kendall Jackson Winery, about 9 years later. Mm-hmm. And then they became the medal winning winery in California while I was there for 6 years.
You found your calling. Mm.
I had a lot of fun because I got to make the kind of wine that I was excited about, wines that had a lot of flavor and personality. And
yeah, and they were incredibly well received. So it
they were.
Like, yeah.
And I had a lot of energy at that point, too. And that was important because I had to work like a dog to do all the things that I did. In a typical day at Kendall Jackson, I taste at least 80 wines, but usually over 100. Because there were so many lots, I think I had somewhere about 350 individual lots of wine.
Oh, my God.
There were 85 Merlots the last year I was there. every vineyard on every day became an individual lot because they were different, and we wanted to make each wine, I say we, me and my team, we wanted to make every batch be what it could be, the best that it could be. And sometimes that means putting it in new oak, and sometimes it means old oak, and sometimes it means French oak, and sometimes it means no oak at all. So there's a lot of variables.
Yeah.
Were you able, sort of during this time frame, like able to spend as much time in the vineyards as you would have liked, or were you really just focused on the cellar and kind of the winemaking and the blending, and did you have to go on the road?
I didn't have to go on the road very much, and I didn't really like doing it. When I got to Kendall Jackson, I said, you know, I'm fine on going on the road, but just for a week. You know, I'm not going to spend a weekend. Mm-hmm. In, I don't know.
Oh wait, yeah,
Cincinnati
away from home
someplace.
And family, and yeah,
right. Because Paul was probably like a little baby.
My kids were growing up, and I wasn't seeing a lot of them because I was commuting up to Lakeport, and you know, it's an hour and a half each way, and I'm generally working like 12-hour days.
So this was the era of Kendall Jackson pre coming to Santa Rosa and kind of building that.
That all happened while I was there.
Okay.
Yes, we purchased Vinwood Cellars in Healdsburg, and that became a pretty important hub. And then we started developing our whole bottling facility because we were making a lot of wine, and we didn't really have enough tanks to blend it all in. So then we did that, and we created that big blending facility over on Skyline.
Wow. So, yeah, I mean, seminal years. So yeah. I imagine you knew Jess Jackson fairly well.
I did.
Era.
He was I really liked Jess. He had a really a scientific way of going about business, and he analyzed everything. He analyzed, what are the best vineyards? Well, who's winning the medals? Where are those grapes coming from? Well, I want to buy grapes from those vineyards. Those wines turned out really good. We want to buy those vineyards. Mm-hmm. And so that was the way he went.
Yeah, and he was so smart about the marketing piece of it too, though. Like put your own name on a bottle, not other people's names necessarily on the vineyard side, it seemed. So interesting ahead of his time. But we do have to take a quick break, so I'm just going to do that, and we'll come right back with the Hollies. Stuff with our guest Paul Hawley, general manager, and John Hawley, founder of Hawley Wines. So Paul, we'd like to get you in on the conversation here. You grew up with a winemaker dad.
In the house that he built with his friends.
Yes, in the house that he
your
built
dad,
with his
not
friend.
You. Well, I assume.
So did you grow up in that house?
I grew up in that house, but yeah, I grew up on the property. You know, my dad was at Clos du Bois and Kendall Jackson while I was growing up, and then right when I was finishing up high school was when he left Kendall Jackson to start doing his own thing, mm-hmm. and started making some wine in the garage and at another winery in Dry Creek Valley. And then he started building our winery in the middle of the vineyard, like right as I was going off to UC Santa Cruz. Okay. So I would come back summers and kind of help out with a little bit of harvest, my brother as well. I think he actually took a semester off to help you in the winery.
When you were harvest. In New Zealand.
When I was in New Zealand, yeah. So after I graduated, I went to New Zealand, worked a harvest there, lived there for 6 months, lived in Australia for 6 months, and my brother came and visited me after he finished harvest, and that was kind of where I started to realize that the wine business was more than just this like local thing that we had in Healdsburg, and that, you know, I had grown up just knowing that, well, it's mainly like a lot of hard work out in the sun in the vineyard, suckering and pruning and all that, which, you know, he had me doing all growing up.
Of course.
And you know, and then the winemaking part is mainly just cleaning and taking apart equipment and fixing it when it breaks. And it just wasn't super exciting. And then when
you're really selling it right now.
Well, going to New Zealand, working in a bigger winery, I was working the night shift, working with people from all over the world. And I kind of realized that it's a global industry, that there's way more to it than mm-hmm. just even just the production part. And, you know, meeting people that come from different backgrounds, different parts of the world, have, you know, different career paths and things they're interested. I just started to realize that there's a lot more to it, and that my perspective was way too narrow. And my brother came and visited. We toured around. We tasted wine. We started talking about ideas of things that we could do. And so then that was probably 2005 when I got back. And I think Austin was still in college. And I started working full-time with my dad. And just, you know.
And started taking business classes.
That's right, yeah. I kind of...
Somebody needed to know something about business because I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, very important skill set.
Yeah, I kind of went back to school, went to the JC, did a business certificate there just to get all the accounting background. I just kind of saw where we were missing a little bit in our team, because it was just, you know, me and my dad and my brother working together. You know, we were all in an office probably smaller than the studio, and we were all kind of trying to figure out where we fit into this little family business and where you know, where our skills could best be put to use. Yeah. And I figured that I could start taking over more of the accounting and the business aspects, and then let my dad and my brother fight over who's going to make the winemaking decisions.
That's good. but in school you studied film production.
I did.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about that. I mean, have you continued with some of that? Some of the filmmaking, photography.
He does use that all the time.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah, I also
helpful in a wine industry.
I do a lot of videos, mostly social media and stuff. I do, you know, some stuff for fun. I co-wrote and co-directed a feature back in like 2007, I think, called Corked.
Okay, tell us more about that. All right, a mockumentary.
A mockumentary about the wine industry. So it was sort of having a go at the wine business and just all the ridiculous aspects
right.
of it.
Some of the pretension, mm-hmm. some of the. Okay. Well, that's fair. I hope you continue that side gig,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
We might need another couple of these now.
Yes, final tap.
I think version. One of the big things that Paul did is he decided that what I was doing wasn't making sense, selling wine through the three-tier system, because we were making less money on every bottle of wine than any entity along the line. And he wanted us to go sell directly to the public. And so they found a tasting room. Paul ran all the numbers and said, let's do this. And we did. And we started selling our wine just directly to the public. And we pulled out of most of our retail markets.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it was a bit of a transition. But, you know, when my brother and I, started working with our dad, we were just making Viognier and Merlot off of our property, and 100% of it was being sold through distributors. In 2010 or 2011, we opened the tasting room in downtown Healdsburg and kind of started our transition to direct to consumer. Now we're like 95% direct to consumer.
That's great. Yeah.
Which it's kind of the only model for a small winery.
Yeah, increasingly so. Mm-hmm. So you were ahead of your time in thinking that. Probably a really important.
Yeah.
It was really important.
Really,
it made
important
a big
decision.
Difference.
Yeah. So what have you learned about kind of, you know, running a tasting room? Like, the storytelling certainly that's a skill set of yours. Like, is that important? Like, what have you learned about the hospitality side?
I think that people that come to the tasting room, they're really looking to for a connection, and that they're not necessarily, some people are there that, looking for a specific wine, something for their cellar, something to take home. But most people are just there because they're exploring the region. They want an experience. They want, they love it when they get to feel a connection with a vineyard or a wine or a family or anything like that. So, when you are a small family operation, it's pretty easy because, what a lot of people are looking for is what you authentically are. You don't have to make up a lot of marketing story around what you do and who you are, because we are just a small family, multi-generational winery, and so all we have to do is explain that to
tell it like it is, huh?
Tell it like it is, yeah.
Right, and introduce yourself as, you're a Holly, so they get to meet the actual owners, which I do think is increasingly important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we grow most of our own grapes, too.
Okay, so the whole, so your estate,
and
your
we're
family.
Organic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all the things.
Yeah, we got certified organic in 2006.
Wow, and days.
Yeah, we've been doing it since then.
That's great. So have you expanded? So you were talking about Viognier and Merlot, so... What do you make now?
We make everything.
We make wine for our customers, we have to make everything. We have to have Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Viognier, of course, because that's really our flagship white wine. But we've got to make Pinot Noir. We've got to make Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Malbec, Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Petite Sirah, and blends of those things, and not to mention Nebbiolo and Sangiovese.
Yeah. You're back to your days of like a 350 lots. So.
Well, exactly.
We have to take a quick break, so when we come back, we'll talk more with the Hollies about their wines. Our guest guests, John Hawley and Paul Hawley of Hawley Wines. And at some point, well, I think it's been mentioned a couple times. Beer has been mentioned a couple times.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it takes a lot of beer to make wine.
That's what they always said at the wineries that I worked at.
Yeah, and it's very true. So, Paul, tell us a little bit. You are in the beer business. How did that happen?
So that kind of goes back to New Zealand, too. So I went there with my, well, he's now my cousin, but he was my best friend. We went to New Zealand together. We worked at the winery together. We were both on the night shift. And we would, the winery had a beer fridge that after you clock off of your 12-hour shift, you could have a couple beers from the beer fridge. But unfortunately, the day shift would often clean it out, and we'd go there after a long night of crushing Sauv Blanc, and we'd open the beer fridge, and it's empty. And now what are you going to do? Like, it's like 7 in the morning. You can't go to a bar. You can't go to a grocery store. Hey. So we started homebrewing just to keep our fridge at home stocked with beer. And
very resourceful.
Yeah, it's
and we kind of kept that going after we came back from Australia and New Zealand. We just kept homebrewing. We were living together in Cotati and turned our garage into a homebrew setup. Remy went to UC Davis, did the Master Brewers program, and then we decided, hey, let's give this a go. It was kind of good timing right around 2012, and we opened the brew pub as a small little local brew pub with a tiny kitchen. We've kind of expanded a bit since then. We now have a beer garden in Healdsburg, and a full restaurant in Santa Rosa. Now we have production off-site in a warehouse as well.
Wow.
And we've brought back a couple of heritage beers, Red Tail Ale and Eye of the Hawk from the old Mendocino Brewing Company.
That's right. Wow. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember that.
So, we're brewing those now, which is cool because the Red Tail Ale was the beer that my dad kept stocked in our fridge because of his love of raptors.
Okay, yeah, it was a favorite with a lot of the falconers that were flying red tail hawks. So,
you became one of those.
I was one of those. I had done falconry as a kid.
Oh,
so tell us what that is exactly.
Falconry is hunting wild game using birds of prey.
Mm-hmm. And you have to train them and establish a relationship.
Or you have to establish a relationship with them. You have to. You have to convince them that you're a safe place to be, that you have something that they want, like food, and that they'll hang out with you. But most of it, they know. You don't have to teach them how to fly. You don't have to teach them what to chase. They know what the game is, and they're way ahead of us on that part.
But they're a very helpful tool in the vineyard, no? Because they sort of deal with gophers and moles and all that stuff.
They are much more than gophers and moles, actually. We use them for abatement, which is has very low impact because nothing usually dies when you're doing abatement. In abatement, we go out to, say, a vineyard, and one peregrine falcon can cover about 500 acres, so it can be a big vineyard. You put your bird up, and it starts cruising around, and you keep it up in the sky for about an hour. And you do that first thing in the morning. The flocking birds send scouts out in all directions to find out where they're going to feed that day. Hmm. And if they see a falcon in the vineyard, they're not going to feed there that day. And so it's very low impact. Nobody gets hurt. Hmm. And, we used to have propane cannons. They worked for a while until the birds got used to it. We put tinsel out. That worked for a while until the birds got used to it. They had squawking noises and electric wires and all kinds of things. But it turns out that a bait with falcons is much easier and much more reliable.
So in the time we have left, we should probably talk about there is an experience that people can go.
Yeah, we've started doing an experience up at the vineyard on Fridays. You can make a reservation and come meet my dad and his falcon, and he kind of shows a little bit of the gear and the process involved in working with. Right now he has a peregrine falcon.
Mm-hmm. And so it has a name. I'm sure.
That's what I wanted to know.
Well, her name is Lena.
Lena. Okay.
I don't know if you know about a peregrine falcon, but a peregrine falcon is a bird that generally circles way up high in the sky to hunt and comes down at speeds up to 240 miles an hour.
Wow.
Incredible bird. Yeah. So people have to see it for themselves. It sounds like.
I'm kind of forgetting where I.
You were talking about the name Lena, I think.
Oh, okay. So I was trying to name my bird. I didn't know what to name her. So I picked out Lena because I didn't know anybody named Lena. and then I looked it up on Google and it said it's a Persian name and it means bolt of lightning in the dark.
Oh, awesome.
Actually is a very fitting name for a peregrine falcon.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you so much for coming on and telling us all the things about Holly Winery and Fog Belt and Lena. Go visit Holly Winery.
Come and taste our wines because our wines are the real stars.
Love it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Wrapping things up on today's good stuff, and we were talking wine, we were talking beer, we were talking falcons.
Lena.
Lena, the magical falcon.
The 240 mile per hour dive from the sky. She's a badass.
I know.
Am I allowed to say that? Sorry, Jeff just looked at me.
Yeah. I guess so. You said jackass earlier, too. So.
Yeah, that is the name.
That's a formal name.
We weren't trying to be mean or anything.
No. We're not saying whether we've ever used that name under any other circumstances, but...
Quick shout out before you guys do your Tuesday Night Wines, just because of the Fog Belt connection there. I highly recommend people get the Backloop IPA. It's a New Zealand IPA, but I put two and two together in real time. I was just like, oh, no bleep. Like, that's where you got it from, huh? So,
That's great.
Backloop is a dope beer at Fog Belt.
Okay, good recommendation.
All right.
We have them all over the place. This is great. Well, I actually want to go there.
I haven't been.
Okay, so let's go right after this.
Do it.
Perfect. Just do it. Jeff says, just do it. Go.
Yes.
Go do that. And then also go visit Holly.
Yep. So Holly is, you can reach them hollywine.com or email taste@hollywine.com. They are in Healdsburg on North Street, 36 North Street, open 12 to 6 daily, except Wednesdays, I think. Walk-ins are welcome.
No, love that. And
so just walk in.
The new experience to reserve in advance is going out and
just show up.
Seeing Lena.
Show up.
Do her job in the vineyard.
Yeah, that you may have to book ahead. But
I think so. I definitely think so.
She gets days off.
I love that.
So very fun. Effective.
Well, that was great. I have to just be honest. I didn't know all that history.
Yeah.
So
we're here to learn.
And a pretty formative time in the wine industry to be coming in with Clos du Bois and Kendall Jackson and helping shape those programs and then going off and launching your own.
A huge contributor to Sonoma County Wine.
Glad to
know more. What are you going to drink?
Well, I love Rhone white wines, and so super excited that the Howley has a Viognier, and that was actually kind of one of their start and flagship wines. So they actually brought us a bottle. It's the 2024, so I'm just going to tuck this away and pull it right back out on Tuesday, maybe late afternoon, early evening.
Okay, well, I will join you with my very beautiful bottle that they also brought that has a falcon on it.
Well, there you go.
I don't know if it's Lena. It could be a different falcon. I don't know. It's the 2017 Broadwing by Holly, and it is an estate meritage, Dry Creek Valley. So looks like it's mostly Cab Sauv, a little Cab Franc, and a little bit of Merlot.
I love that.
Aged for a very long time.
And just kind of going back to the story about it, you know, building your own house, knowing how to do all of that plumbing and electrical, and then making wine, and then thinking, I mean, just, it's nice to know. I mean, that does take a lot of different skills to actually be super effective in this business.
Well, and then at least we heard about two of the sons, and so one is really involved in production, it sounds like, and good on Paul for learning about the business side, but then he's got the film side, the storytelling side,
and then the brewery.
The beer side.
Yeah. So
he's covered every important thing that you need to operate a wine business.
I do feel it. Like that was kind of the theme of their story. It was like, well, we need something, so we just built it, created it, started it.
Yeah. Plus falcons.
Yes. Hmm. Like, I need a house. I'll just build one.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of an initial note to you know, to a family member and then
to get a vineyard, to buy a vineyard. Yeah. I wonder how much of that, I mean, that was probably much more the norm than
I know, I would imagine,
today.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
all right.
Good old
well,
days.
Great show, great guests from Sonoma County to wherever you are. Remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.